Welcome to the Access Astrology Podcast. My name is Alison Price. I'm here with my good friend Arwen O'Neill, and we're coming to you from Vancouver, Canada. This week we're going to be talking about the transits and ingresses between February the 8th to the 21st, 2015, and our Astrology 360 topic this week is Neptune.
Yes, indeed. We'll be talking about the planet of Neptune and what it means in your chart, and what it symbolizes, and what it rules, and all those things.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yep. But we're going to start with the transits and ingresses for February 8th through 21st. So the first thing we've got happening is Mercury is going to be stationing direct on February 10th.
Yes.
So that's exciting. It'll be going direct, and it's been retrograde since the 21st mm-hmm. of January. Then on February 18th, the sun's going to be moving into Pisces.
Yes.
The watery feminine mutable sign ruled by Neptune, which we'll be talking about later. And on the 19th, Mars is moving into Aries. So this I'm comparing to going from swimming through mud to running through the desert.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's going to be moving out of Pisces, where it's not super happy, into Aries, where it is super happy. Yeah. And then the very next day, we're going to have Venus conjunct Mars, which is... That is a hell of a one, in Aries, no less. So I wouldn't schedule any first dates for that night. Oh. That would be my only advice. If you have to.
Yes, because Venus is going into Aries at the same time, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So they're both getting together and plunging on into Aries, pressing into the beginning of the zodiac. So that should be,
You might need to go outside and burn off some steam that day.
And so that's kind of it. It's really slim pickings this time, isn't it? There's nothing from the bigger planets, only the smaller planets moving, minding their own business, even, we could say.
All except for Venus and Mars.
Yes.
Yep. Ramming. Okay, so what's the moon doing?
Yes, well, as I say every time, the moon is always moving. Mm-hmm. So during this period, we've just got two phases coming up. On the 12th of February, we've got the last quarter phase. During this period, then the moon's light is becoming less, if I can even say it that way. And then on the 18th of February, we have a new moon. And this is at 0 degrees Pisces. It's 0 degrees, 0 minutes Pisces. So it's just into Pisces. The sun will have gone in on the 18th, and then the moon immediately goes in afterwards. And we get the new moon in Pisces. And this is what I do want to mention about these Pisces new moons is that the next new moon will also be in Pisces, but at 29 degrees. So that's kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
Because up until now, we've had 0 degrees, 0 degrees. And finally, we're going to get two new moons in the one sign of Pisces.
Yeah. It's weird. I want to see a diagram. I want to see like an animation explaining to me why it's not always at 0 degrees of whatever sign.
Yes. You know? Yes. Well,
sounds
there you
like
go.
It kind of should be. I don't know.
So Pisces is getting a double hit from the new moons, but the one we're talking about now is only going to be on the 18th.
Yeah. So new moon wishing in something Pisces.
Yes, of course. So you've got it twice in Pisces. Mm-hmm. So zero Pisces for you is...
For you? Yeah, for me, it's in fifth, I think.
Somewhere exciting in your chart.
Yeah, fifth house, I think. Or actually zero. Gosh, it's probably still in my fourth house.
Yeah, so I've got it like in the ninth house, and I think the two actually, I believe, are in the ninth. So you may get a double hit, or you may get two separate houses coming up. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Well, all right. That is what's going on in the sky. Our 360 topic today is Neptune. And appropriately, I am totally unprepared. I'm just going to come out and say it. Because it's funny. It's so funny because usually I do all this research.
Owen is super prepared.
Super prepared.
She embarrasses me with her preparedness.
Last episode, I had 7 pages of notes. I had pictures. But that was a little crazy and excessive. It was like an essay. And this time I'm like, I have...
You're going to wing it, are you?
A few, yeah. I mean, I did find one person who I can chat about a little bit, and I have their chart. But, I mean, it's... Yeah, I'm winging it.
So why do you think this is, why are you saying it's appropriate?
It's appropriate because, and it's funny because I'm sort of paraphrasing Liz Green here, and I may do that liberally throughout the podcast, fair warning. She has written the Bible of Neptune, the massive 500-page tome called Neptune, The Quest for Redemption. The Astrological Neptune and The Quest for Redemption is the full name of that Liz Green book, just so I can completely and fully give credit where it's due here. But at one point in this book, she does mention that she had so much trouble writing this book compared with other books, so, you know, Saturn and all these other great books that she's written.
Yes.
But that she had so much trouble focusing when she decided to write this book on Neptune, and that it took longer than she expected because she found she kept getting distracted and pulled away, and how appropriate.
And that's
that
because
was.
Neptune is distracting.
It is. It's the planet of
unpreparedness.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I mean, the few keywords that I could fill a whole page with just Neptune keywords, and that would be fun, actually, but I just haven't yet. But some of the keywords that come to mind are, it represents dreams, delusions, spirituality, but also deception and manipulation, glamour, and photography, film, all of those media, basically any kind of performance, magic.
Magic's big.
Yeah, music, dancing,
movies. David Copperfield.
Totally. Exactly. And
sleight of hand.
Sleight of hand, definitely. That's a very good word for it, or few words for it. But yeah, it fuzzifies things. It sort of, it blurs things. And any planet that has aspects to Neptune in your chart or an event chart, it tends to sort of blur the definition of that planet as it touches it. And it's kind of like the Vaseline on the lens, or like the screen over the lens that makes everything sort of dreamy and fuzzy if you were going to film a
movie. Rose-tinted spectacles.
Yeah, if you wanted to have a dream sequence where things are sort of not really clear and you can't really tell what's going on. If you were filming a David Lynch movie, for example, that would be the Neptune filter.
It has to do with sleep and dreaming and nightmares too, right?
Mm-hmm, totally. I'm picturing all those great, like, and this is actually fairly appropriate because all those paintings from the Romantic era of the pre-Victorian and all those wonderful paintings of dreams and nightmares and weird little golem type of creatures sitting on the edge of your bed. Yeah, Edvard Munch and just all of that stuff is very Neptune. And also it was very timely because Neptune, when it was discovered, was 1848, and that was the beginning of that period in art. And sort of romantic period in literature and poetry and Rousseau and all those people, Noble Savage and whatnot. So all that stuff is very Neptune, and appropriately enough, planets tend to be discovered when their mythology is ready to emerge into the consciousness.
That's correct. Discovery chart's always very interesting.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Like for example, Uranus is associated with revolution, and it was the time of revolution in France and in the U.S. And so that's what's happening with Neptune, generally speaking. There are, let's see.
But that's actually, when we think about it, all those like wishy-washy words that we always use with Neptune, it's very difficult to make any sense of it to bring it back to the natal chart. And people will say, well, how does that really affect me? What does it really mean?
Yeah, exactly. You can only really define it in terms of its relationship with another planet. Mm. You can't really just isolate it. It's sort of,
it's what your dreams are.
Yeah, which is interesting because when you think about how it was discovered also, that's appropriate because no one could see it with the naked eye. And it wasn't something that it's not like where they had been seeing it for a long time, like Uranus, and they just hadn't recognized that it was a separate planet. It was something where they needed to have, you know, special lenses and telescopes and they had, like, the technology had to exist in order for it to even be visible. And then it was only visible because it was in certain relationships to other planets at the time. In fact, it was opposite, I believe, opposite or conjunct to Saturn at the time when it was discovered.
And had it been somewhere else on its cycle, it would not have been discovered during that period. Yes.
Yeah. So that's fascinating.
So Neptune rules Pisces.
It does. Yeah. It's the modern ruler of Pisces. It was
the modern ruler. Yes.
It was previously it was co-ruled by Jupiter along with Sagittarius.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny when you think about Sagittarius and Pisces. You don't really, they don't seem all that similar. But yeah.
And we're talking about it now because the sun's in Pisces, and we've got this new moon coming into Pisces, and it's two new moons. It's not every year you'll have two new moons in Pisces.
Yeah.
With not having the facts at my fingertips on that, but that is kind of interesting. So we're getting a double whammy bit of that. So it's like we're getting a double type Pisces, I think, this year.
Yeah. So, which may please some of us and some of us not so much.
Indeed, indeed. But on the upside, Neptune is very artistic, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
It's, it's your imagination that you can bring into your knitting, your sewing, yeah. all the stuff you do.
Or you can't. I mean, some people might not have any aspects whatsoever. And right? And so I think it definitely helps. It can hurt or help in your chart. Yes. It can create delusional people or, you know, people who have trouble with being, you know, direct and honest, and the kind of slippery types reality. Of people that you can never really quite pin down what they're talking about, or, you know, madness and addiction and all these other bad things. But it can also create, you know, sort of a visionary personality who maybe in spirituality or in art or in music is a pioneer of creativity. Yes. And yeah, I'll get into one example later. But okay. Just in terms of music and art, like Kurt Cobain had a, you know, he was famously Pisces, and he had lots of planets in Pisces. And he even mentioned it in his suicide note, which has got to be, you know, that's a big Neptune shout out right there.
So, yes, yes, you know, yes.
That. But yeah, I mean, just using his as an example, there are a lot of famous Piscean suicides we could mention here. Sadly, David Foster Wallace was the British designer who I love. Oh, boy.
Alexander McQueen.
Thank you. Yes, Pisces suicide. Yeah, so it does have, you know, some associations. Unfortunately, if you Google, you know, what astrological sign is most associated with suicide, I don't know statistically if this is accurate, but every result will tell you Pisces, sadly. And it just means that they're fragile and, you know, they need help. Oh, they need a vessel to hold all of that Neptunian liquidy sort of creative
force.
But again,
we have to say it does depend how it fits in your chart, because totally. We all have a Neptune.
Absolutely.
Whether
this
we
is
like
all
it or
archetypal
not.
Stuff.
And some
yeah.
of us are
yeah.
not so keen on having it there, but we've all got one.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's changeable.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how you've changed just now, a moment ago.
Oh my gosh. Hilarious.
It's how it goes, yeah.
Yeah.
Neptune is very interesting.
Yeah.
In as much as it's difficult to put your finger on it, it's difficult with your chart to maybe get a grip on it.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not the way through other planets or other connections, I think.
Yeah. Or whatever it is that it represents is something that you feel it's hard to describe.
Yes.
From your own perspective. It's the intangible, undescribable sort of stuff. Mm. It's the not Mercury stuff.
Yeah.
The, well, exactly. And that's appropriately because Virgo is ruled by Mercury.
And it's all states, because it's all the all states of unconscious, that's where yeah. it comes into the alcohol, how it changes
right.
you. Either you're feeling happy, you're a happy drunk.
Yeah, it brings things to the surface
drunk.
That are usually buried, or yes. not buried, but submerged, there would be the word.
So you can actually see life and cope with life through, because you've had a couple of drinks on the way home or something, and we all do it.
Right.
So to change the reality
yeah.
to something more palatable.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's to do the same with smoking, and that's what the drugs do, really. We're talking street drugs, right? But still, yeah. even the main ones as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's all the same chemistry. It's all just amazing, brain chemistry and meddling with the little tiny, tiny changes that ripple out and you know, make a huge effect.
Yes.
It's all that. Definitely.
So,
examples. Let's see. Well, here's one example. Our...
You've brought an example chart here today.
I brought one example chart, yeah. And I didn't go into too much detail of this one because, A, I'm not sure that many people will have heard of him. And
okay, but, that immediately rules me out, really.
But, okay, so Lon Chaney, not junior but senior, Lon Chaney was a film star from the silent era. He was in 150 silent films, and he was known as the Man of 1,000 Faces. He was famously portrayed by James Cagney in 1957. They didn't call them biopics back then. It was just a movie, but it was based on his life. And his most famous roles were The Hunchback of Notre Dame and The Phantom of the Opera.
Okay.
He pioneered amazing techniques in stage makeup and film makeup.
Makeup.
He used to design sets and paint sets as well when he was breaking into film and on stage. So that's also paint, you know, is also very Neptune. And he famously portrayed sort of grotesque and deformed and misshapen characters who nonetheless would grasp the sympathy and the empathy of the audience. And through his, you know, the characters being very self-sacrificing and noble, they would get the audience's empathy and support,
huh.
despite their appearance.
So he has sun in Pisces, is that what we're saying?
He had the ascendant and Neptune conjunct within less than a degree.
Neptune on the ascendant
and also opposite his north node, and also conjunct Saturn and Chiron, and just one degree too wide to be also conjunct Pluto. So massive pileup right there on the ascendant, all conjunct Neptune. And Neptune, in addition to that, in his chart, is in a grand trine with the Moon and Uranus. So okay, there's
so
this
he's
all
got a bit
very
of everything going on there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but it yeah, it all kind of ties into this,
so
this
prominent Neptune
conjunction. Very prominent, yeah. Yeah. The Man of a Thousand Faces. I think that's a very interesting sort of metaphor for inspiring sympathy through your self-sacrificing noble spirit. It's brilliant. And just a tidbit additional to that is that his son, Lon Chaney Jr., was the he was also in dozens and dozens of films, and he played mostly in horror movies and was like the Wolfman and the
Changeling.
Yeah. So his son carried on the tradition.
Gosh, how interesting.
Yeah.
That's going to be a tough one, though, Neptune on the ascendant.
Yeah. Oh, well, his wife, actually, one of these weird little things, he was married twice, and his first wife tried to commit suicide by drinking poison, which is also Neptunian.
Yes, yes, yes.
I didn't see her chart at all, but that's...
Taking the easy way out, that is.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. It didn't work, though.
No.
She didn't succeed in committing suicide by drinking poison, which is an interesting thing for him. Yeah.
So do you have a lot of Pisces in your life?
No, not at all. I mean, I have a couple of major aspects to Neptune, but no Pisces. No Pisces at all. No.
No. I meant people, actually.
Oh, no.
Well, let me tell you about my Pisces
Please,
family.
Please, do. Yes.
Both my mother and my father are Pisces.
Yeah.
My sister is a Pisces, and I have a Pisces daughter.
That's amazing.
So it's like,
wow.
I have a...
Your cup runneth over.
Yes, well, yes, I suppose so. I just, I do get it. I understand it, but it's, I don't, you know.
It's totally foreign to you.
Ah, you know, you see it and you know them and they shuffle along and you know.
Yeah.
Very much, yeah, a lot of what we said is very, very, very much the case. That
You must have grown up with lots of very comfortable furniture. Big cushy, comfy couches that you sink into. Throw
yes,
pillows and things.
Yes, you know, love of that. But yeah, dreamy and lots of shoes. It's big shoe thing. It really is a big shoe thing.
Yeah. Well, I think I plug this every single time. But my friend, former coworker of mine, quit working where we worked together and opened a shoe store. She's a Pisces, and her shoe store is called Shoe Fix, as in fix, as in addiction, as in hello Pisces, like.
Right.
Off the scale, off the charts.
Yes,
it's crazy.
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yes.
So go shopping for shoes if you live in Vancouver. Shoe yeah. Fix. Mm. Yeah, but that's so Pisces.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, I have no Pisces in my chart, but I'm prepared to talk about the placement of Neptune in my chart.
Okay.
If you are.
So I'll tell you yours if you're showing much. Okay, so this is not the first planet you're going to talk about in a chart. It's not the first
no.
thing we know about anybody.
Unless, as you say, you look at someone's chart, and if it's right sitting on their ascendant, you might want to start there. In that case, if it was Lon Chaney sitting across from you, then maybe that's where you start.
Yeah.
But probably with me, not so much.
No.
No.
No? You see, Pisces is opposite all that Virgo anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this Neptune of yours.
Yes. Actually, strangely enough, even though my Neptune is in Sagittarius, it finds a way to be, like, not quite opposite, but square all of my Virgo. So I've got the three planets in Virgo in the 10th house, and they're all in, you know, fairly
right.
tight square to the Neptune in my second house in Sagittarius.
Okay.
Right. Neptune actually spends about 12 years in each sign. This is the cycle of Neptune. So it's more of a generational planet, along with Uranus and Pluto. Actually, at one point, tiny little part in the cycle, Pluto moves inside of the orbital
yes,
path
yes,
of
yes.
Neptune. And
so is that when you were born?
No.
Oh, okay. So
I was just saying.
Thought that's where
so you can
going.
Picture it.
Yes, that was quite recent. Yes.
Yeah.
In living memory, we'll say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, indeed. It was. I think it was in the...
80s?
80s or 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So Neptune, when it's going through 12 years, obviously that's a decade, basically it rules a lot to do with popular culture. It has a lot of effect on trends and on clothing styles and on makeup styles and on car styles
yes.
and the things that you are hearing on the radio and a lot of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And the underground stuff as well, the drinking and the drug, definitely.
Right. You can name one drug for each decade and it lines right up
that's
with Neptune.
Right.
It's hilarious. Actually, that's a great party game. If anyone is looking for a party game, just pick a, you know, a topic like cars or hats or I don't know, and then go through the Neptune's placements and write a list of fun correspondences.
All right,
but,
so anyway.
But this book that's in front of me right now, this Neptune book by Les Green, I'm going to read a couple of excerpts
okay.
from it because I have not written a book on Neptune and it's I think it's good to defer to the masters, you know. So, Neptune in the second house.
It has to do, surely, with how you earn your money.
Yes, it does, indeed. And also with your sense of meaningfulness and contribution to society. As she says here, there is a sense of being victimized by the materialism of the world.
Oh.
And this is a direct quote here, which is interesting because I've actually, not now, not recently, but I have actually felt that way in the past, in long ago, long, long mm-hmm. ago. Just, yeah, sort of unprepared for the constantness of...
having to pay the rent, yeah, basically. Yeah,
constantly. And, you know, basically it sort of enslaves you to the cycle of every single day of your life being forced to go out and do something that you have no interest in for
yes,
somebody else
yes,
forever.
Yes.
And it's yes. rough. It's a terrible thing when you can, you know, when you sit back and think about it, which you try not to most of the time. But with Neptune in the second house, it maybe hits you a little bit harder every once in a while that is a thing that we have to do in
okay.
modern life.
Right, yeah. right.
Financial victimization is a potential that she says is you can be deceived by people and sucked into, you know, con men kind of schemes and whatnot. Or,
Ponzi
you know,
schemes.
Conversely, you could be the one perpetrating such things, apparently.
No, not you.
No, certainly not. Too busy working three jobs.
Yes, exactly.
To prevent, you know, said victimization. that's all the Virgo. And here this is interesting. Neptune in the second house can reflect a capacity to develop self-worth and material independence through the practical expression of the imagination and the sense of unity with life. So that's interesting.
Do you do that?
I believe so.
Okay.
I believe so. Good. I believe that my self-worth is definitely a product of my practical expression of my creativity and imagination.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll take that one to the bank.
Yeah. But yeah, as if we aren't all, you know, making our wealth through the products of our imagination
no,
in some way.
We're not.
All right.
Is this sensitive, would you say?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sweating and okay. you know, profusely. Yeah. No, it's that's funny. It is. I don't know, because I don't know if it's just because of being a Virgo and because it's in square to all of my personal planets that matter. But it just seems embarrassing, sort of. This topic, doesn't it? Or is it just me? Because if it's just me, that's fine. That's
it's
educational.
It is. It's so, you know, difficult to come up with something tangible that makes any sense to anybody, saying, as we say, that your self-worth is through your
like,
inspiration.
Oh, well, that's great. And like,
but how does that, how do you earn money with Neptune in the second house?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Good question. You trick people into thinking that you can do stuff for them, and then...
And after, and then you pull a rabbit out of the hat, right?
Apparently still, yeah, yeah.
And
after a while, it becomes true.
So you actually then, because your second house is how you earn your money.
Yeah.
And you have to earn money.
You and your sense of, yes. yeah.
And how do you do it behind this layer?
Yeah.
Where you work here privately.
Yeah.
And no one ever quite knows who she is.
Maybe.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure.
And you've also had jobs in the past.
Oh,
in
the
Neptunian
past,
type industry. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Totally, yeah. Oh,
you went to art school.
I went to art school. That's Neptunian.
Did you want to be an artist? Was that the dream? What was the dream?
Well,
what
was
your dream job?
I wanted to be a movie star.
Oh!
I
there you go.
Yeah, I settled for the practical career move of being an art student. And I'm not even, I wish I was kidding. No, that is actually what happened.
Okay.
So I thought I'd go to art school and I would learn how, you know, to
did
illustrate.
Did you do drama or did you, oh, I see.
Mm, yeah.
Okay.
So this was the, you know, sort of 11th hour, oh God, I guess I have to go to college kind of decision.
Yes.
In the second to last year of high school. So art school was the practical choice then. And
art's the practical choice now. Uh-huh,
yeah. And anytime someone would say, oh, starving artist, ha ha ha, I would be like, totally disdainful of that concept, because there was no plan to be a starving artist. It was, you know, if I'm going to go to art school, it's going to be so I can illustrate book covers or, you know, something useful. And I mean, comic books, I loved collecting comics when I was in school. And the unfortunate part about that is that I can't draw anything but people. So
okay.
They don't make, you know, comic books that have no backgrounds, no furniture, no cars, no, you know, weapons. So if they do, I don't want to read them. They're probably really boring. But yeah. So after, you know, dropping out of... art school, because really there's only so long you can maintain that without being able to justify it financially,
right?
And also working so many hours to actually keep yourself in college.
Night shift,
in restaurants and bars, as another Neptunian thing, as a cocktail waitress. Not at all ashamed to say. And that's also Neptunian.
It's kind of interesting, right?
Yeah. Operating on no sleep at all is Neptunian, and falling asleep in your art history class because they have a little slideshow and you're just like, oh, it's now nice and dark here, I'll just put my head down and rest it and close my eyes for a second, is also Neptunian.
And are you still pursuing the dream, do you think?
No, but the funny part, for about a good 20 years, I totally didn't. I didn't draw anything. People would come over and they would see these drawings up on the wall, because I have a few of them framed, and they'd be like, oh, wow, did you draw that?
Yes.
Because they do look a little bit like myself, because we were supposed to be doing self-portraits and whatnot in drawing class eon ago. And I would say, oh, yeah, no, I don't draw anymore. They'd be like, why not? Yeah, well, whatever. Can't do it as a job, so whatever. Why would I draw? But in the last few years, I've started again, and it's fun, and it's great.
So you're satisfying. You're satisfying totally. The Neptune thing. Yeah. And we see it with the calendars.
Yes.
And whatever it is, that's wherever it's going.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go to Zazzle, look at the calendars. You can buy them. There's
so
a link on the sidebar.
You are able to express it, and maybe one day, if it did come to it, you would drop your day job in a heartbeat to become an artist.
Oh, Lord.
No?
I can't even imagine such a job. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Wow, that was a Neptunian answer, too. No, yeah, no. I don't have a... That's the thing. As for someone that's, supposedly creative and went to art school, I don't have much of an imagination. I really can't even envision, if someone was... Just as an exercise, I can't even envision what kind of a financially stable, actually not terrifying job would involve doing art 100% of the time.
Okay.
That would actually enable me to stay in an apartment in Vancouver where it's wildly expensive.
Open a gallery, you know.
Right. Oh, God. Can you imagine how terrifying that would be? Just... no stability, no safety net, nothing. Just like, oh, here I am with
It shows that the Neptune is not dominant in your chart. Is that Virgo at the top?
Definitely. Totally.
Definitely.
Yeah. Kicking the Neptune every time it tries to grab its feet.
That's not practical. And yet in the city, we've got, 260 art galleries? We have an art gallery in our building.
Right, we do.
We're living right on top of an art gallery.
I wonder how those artists are doing financially.
I don't know.
The gallery does okay. Oh. But,
Maybe they've got Neptune in the second house. We don't know. We can only imagine.
Yeah. Can't only imagine. So your Neptune.
Yes. Fourth house. Neptune, yes.
And how is that?
Well, it doesn't get much of a showing. The Leo will just, it doesn't.
Not much trumps Leo in the first house.
No. It's there. Because it's a Scorpio. You see, that's the thing too. But it's conjunct the moon. So it's this little combination going on down there in the fourth house. I'm not quite sure where to go with that.
And is it making any aspects to anything? Conjunct moon, anything else? That's enough,
That's enough, that's kind of enough. What can I say? I drink at home. Not out, Always have done. Not that I drink a lot, but I don't do it out. I do it at home.
Interesting. I guess you could say, as a former cocktail waitress, I did drink for a living for a little while.
Yes,
briefly.
Yes.
Yeah. So let me read a bit about Moon conjunct Neptune and see what that has to say.
It's all to do with the home and the family and all that, right? And this family full of Pisces.
Definitely.
And dream home. Always had a dream home. I dream about homes, I must tell you.
That's a good one.
About 20 years ago, I had this recurring dream about this house, because we're living in Africa, this house where there was like an atrium within the house. Now, this was unheard of, right? Huh. And I kept saying to my husband, I had this dream again about this house with the glass, and you step out into this atrium and the ferns and whatnot.
Wow.
And eventually, this must have been about 97.
Yeah.
I'm driving down the road where we live, and I see this house, and it's for sale. It's brand new. And I thought, when I stopped, I thought, oh, let me go and look. We were in no possession.
Yeah.
But I went in anyway, and there was this house. And they'd actually got it so that there was this atrium that you could enter, or a closed patio, call it what you will, totally roofed and sealed, from the main bedroom or from the lounge.
Nice.
Into this kind of, they call it a portico thing. And I said to him when I went home, I said, I've seen the house I've been dreaming about all this time.
And it was.
And it was, and we bought it. We couldn't afford it, but we bought it.
Wow.
I know.
That's amazing.
I should bring you some photos.
Yeah.
Because I've never had a bedroom opening onto an enclosed atrium. We call it, I'm saying atrium, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm picturing with the, yeah.
Yes, because the house was like L-shaped and then there was this atrium, enclosed glass, sliding doors.
Yeah.
So, but from the bedroom, that was kind of luxury, right? Yeah. You just step outside and have your tea or something.
It is so, like, Africa.
Yeah, but you're still, yeah.
Inside, so there's no, snapping, biting things at you.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And so what did you put out there? What did you, was it like?
We had patio furniture and I've got some palms and, you know, a little.
Sit out there and have drink.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because you're inside. It also means, you know.
Yeah.
And when we found some, that was a very small garden, but at the back we had a shed we put up to put the lawnmower in. And one morning some cat had some kittens there and we could hear this meow, meow, meow. Oh. And then we had to dig out these kittens and there were like five kittens had just been born. And we took them and put them in this atrium because you want them inside, but not inside.
Right.
And there they were. And they grew up and we fed them and then we found them homes.
Oh my God, I do have home.
And we had these kittens in this place because it was like a concrete floor, you know?
Yeah. So you had your little Leo in the, you know, little Neptunian
in the Neptune
realm.
Fourth house.
That's fantastic.
Glassed in.
Yeah.
Porchy thing.
That's awesome.
Yes. And I dreamt about that for, about 3-4 years before we actually found the house.
Wow.
And I dream about homes we are going to be living in. And we do.
That's very
just a
cool.
feature of it. Just not the whole thing.
Not the floor plan, for God's sake.
No.
Of course.
And then I wake up in the mornings and I draw this picture and I say, this is the one I'm dreaming about now. And I know it's crazy. But...
No, I love that. That's amazing. See,
I've forgotten about that.
That's exactly what that should be. Neptune in the fourth house. That's
and here at the glass house. Fourth house. Yeah. Neptune was that. And we'd sit there.
Very, very cool.
I know.
I like that a lot.
So, I don't know if everyone who's got an Neptune in the fourth house has got a room like that, but I did have one. And that's why I like where we live now, that we have this view.
Yes.
Yeah. We've got this view, because we're on the 26th. We've got the monster view across the city.
Yeah.
We're not looking at a brick wall. I could never, ever
look me neither.
There's no vision.
For me, it would just be the privacy thing. Just, I would have to have my blinds closed 90% of the time, and that would be awful.
So I don't know whether I've got to also... I look at my family with in rose-tinted spectacles and say, oh, yes, weren't they wonderful? Yes, this and that and all the rest of it. But generally, I will say I had a good family life.
Yeah.
So what does your book say?
Oh, gosh. Well, probably nothing nearly as cool as that. That was amazing. That was like the casino story. That was wonderful.
Ah, dig them out. They're coming out of the woodwork.
I love it. They're so visual. It's wonderful. So I'm not sure whether to read an excerpt here from Neptune in the fourth house or Neptune and moon aspects. Let's go for the moon aspect.
Okay.
Okay. So Neptune and the moon have, this is Liz Green again, from The Astrological Neptune and The Quest for Redemption. Neptune and the moon have much in common. Both rule water signs and both are connected with mother and mothering and the need to belong. Empathy, kindness, delicacy of feeling, and a highly developed imaginative faculty are often reflected by Moon-Neptune contacts in the birth horoscope. Equally, these contacts have a reputation for unhappiness, particularly through physical illness and relationship difficulties. Neptune's divine discontent will push the Moon's inherently clannish focus beyond the boundaries of one's immediate sphere of life. The combination can thus reflect deep compassion for the needy and fearful feelings common to all human beings, particularly loneliness.
Oh, yes,
that's
absolutely.
Really cool.
And this illusion of the perfect family that I came from, and yes, and I believe in it. And anyone asks me, I'll say, yes, it was perfect. And of course, I didn't realize it wasn't, but my memory of it is.
Yeah, and that's what you have. That's what you take away is the memory, right?
Even today, I have this illusion that I've got the perfect family, and even though the kids are like,
but that's okay because
tense at times.
It's just like what I said in a kind of joking, sarcastic, whatever, you know, on the DL kind of way about, you know, it's the facade until it becomes real. But that is true.
That's right.
It's
we put it there to protect ourselves, or
certainly in my case, it was. You just have to. You're in a corner and you have to project an image that will save you from drowning.
It's like a hologram.
Yes, exactly.
Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know.
That's right. It's exactly that. It's the fishing line cast outside so that you can hold it and, you know, it'll pull you up out of the water.
Yeah.
And then eventually it's true.
Do you dream much? How's your dream life?
Not really, not anymore, but I think it's just because I'm old. Oh. Apparently children dream more.
It's, I believe so.
Kind of crappy.
No,
but I had boring dreams. Like, my dreams are the worst. Our producer has the coolest dreams. Like, constantly, he'll wake up and be like, oh, I just had the greatest dream. And I'm like, yeah, great, whatever. Because I know that he has the coolest dreams. He's always riding horses or fighting somebody, or not in a slap fight, like can't quite connect in, you know, kind of dumb way, like really? I would, but like a cool dream. Just,
you don't dream about houses and I dream that there's a cat on the bed, you know.
No,
this kind of thing.
No, I'll dream like I'm in school or like in, oh, it was this house, but it wasn't really that house, it was kind of more like this place I went to, you know, work. Or I'll dream that I'm like back, you know, in some job, like awful, like as a waiter, and, you know, tables are full. But not even like that, because that's a classic anxiety dream. I don't even have those anymore. My dreams are so boring. It's dreadful.
Well, maybe we can work on that.
I've had a handful of cool dreams in my life. Really memorable dreams. One interesting dream that I can remember, and the only reason I would mention it is because it's kind of Neptunian. After my grandfather passed away, I had a dream that he and I met in a bar. And when he died, I was 24 maybe, but I had I hadn't seen him since I was like under 21. So we had never actually had a drink together, like a cocktail, you know, a place. This isn't something that was possible. And so in this dream, I think it was like we were in an airport or something. As of course, you know, in my dreams, I never know exactly where I am. So this is a dumb thing. But it seemed like a car, you know, car garage type of like, you know, 7-story garage. And we met and we had a drink at this bar, and we were sitting there and just talking like adults, which we had never actually got a chance to do because he died when I was fairly young. And then at one point he got up and said that he had to go. And that's when in my dream, I knew he was dead. Not, I mean, I knew in waking life too, but in my dream, I realized that he meant, oh, I have to go, like, I'm going now. And I was like, oh my God, don't go. And he's like, it's okay, you know, and he hugged me and then flew off into the distance.
Wow.
Right. Which is a very Neptunian dream about a Gemini grandfather. So, and I thought that was really interesting. It wasn't like a revelation or anything. We had a good relationship. It wasn't like we needed to, you know, apologize or anything. It was just a neat, oh, he came to visit sort of a dream.
Oh, nice.
You know, one of that. But I don't normally have dreams like that. It's just, it's notable because it's so rare. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I know you're supposed to, when you wake up, write it down, but I only do that if it's like really weird.
I got to
really
the point where I couldn't write it fast enough and I had to have a digital recorder and start saying blah, 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 blah.
And when you listen to it later, does it make any sense at all?
It clues you in, right? You know, the tiger was chasing me or...
Oh. See, I would never have a dream about that. Ever.
Oh, yeah. Or I went to the park and my mother was there. And I mean, she passed on years ago. And stuff like this. And we had a picnic outside. And the sun was always shining, you know.
I don't even know if there's weather in my dreams.
Oh, yes. And I, you know, but this business of this house thing became to such a point that I would start to, when I was having a dream about it, I would turn around and look for the street name.
Yeah.
And I'd be saying, now what street, you know.
Right, because you knew it was there.
Because consciously I was
It was a real house. That's amazing. That's so cool.
So there's your dream life, right?
I like that. That's great.
Dream homes. Yes, yeah. Definitely dream homes.
Neptune the 4th. That's awesome. That is. That's great. As far as Neptunian magic tricks, because this is what it comes down to, right? Like, what can you do? Where can you cast spells in your life? I think this is maybe, right? Apparently, and I didn't know this, I didn't know I could do this, but it's a great trick as Neptune in the second house. The second house also, in addition to finances, apparently rules your sort of self-worth, your self-esteem, your image of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much always, ever since I was allowed to wear makeup, have had a thing about lipstick. I just don't like to appear or be seen whatsoever without lipstick. And that's a bit of a neurosis. And I was traveling somewhere to meet people I had never met before a few years ago. And I was a disheveled mess. My hair was all flat and the airplane, you know, environment had just straightened it and it was just awful. And so when I came out to grab my bags and, you know, meet these people who I'd never met before, and I knew what they looked like and they had seen a picture of me, but we'd never face to face. And I was just going, you know, like I just wanted to shrink and just hide. And afterwards, when we were talking, I said something about, oh, last night I looked a mess and my hair, blah, blah, blah. And they looked at each other and they looked at me and they were like, I don't even remember what you looked like last night. And they both kind of had this weird look on their face, like they had, like literally their minds had been wiped by that flashy thing from Men in Black.
Yeah, yeah.
They both kind of looked puzzled, like, yeah, I don't even remember what you looked like last night. That's really weird. And I'm like, hee hee. Yes. You know, good. Yeah, I didn't even know I could do that. So that's cool.
That's good. That's
yeah.
good.
Ta-da!
Invisibility cloak or something.
Yeah. That's my one trick.
Good, mm-hmm. good.
Yeah. Well, so far as book reviews, I think I've pretty much reviewed mine.
Yes, excellent yeah. review.
What's Thank you, Liz Green, the Neptune book. It's a giant, giant book. That's great.
So the book I brought along today is Aspects and Personality by Karen Hamaker-Zondag. And I apologize if I'm saying that incorrectly.
Oh, that sounds good.
And this is quite, it's one of those books that's where the back is broken, as you can see, and all the bits are hanging. But anyway, we keep sticking it back together because that's what you do with books, right?
Indeed. Yeah.
So, and what I've actually got the book open on is the Moon conjunct Neptune aspect.
Oh, good.
So, because it's actually talking about aspects, so we can't do houses here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just give you a little bit here.
Please do.
When the sensitive and security-seeking Moon teams up with the refining and disassociating Neptune, there is great susceptibility to undercurrents in the environment.
Huh.
Moods can change not for emotional reasons, but because the person is picking up certain vibrations, usually without being consciously aware of them.
Mm.
So I'll give that a definite thumbs up, that kind of thing, where I maybe will go somewhere or meet someone or be forced into having dinner with someone or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think, I never want to see that person again, and I will withdraw.
Yeah.
Maybe you do that too, I don't know. Yeah, sensitive to environments, yeah. but definitely... especially because we live in the city, you've got to be aware of what's
Definitely.
Going on and
yeah.
Which elevator you're getting into and who's in it and this and that. And...
Yeah, actually, yeah. The dinner party thing threw me off, but I've done that
yes.
so much in public spaces where every once in a while, I can remember this one time very vividly on the SkyTrain.
I think I was with you that night.
Really? Where there was somebody that was sitting over here and it was just like, this person was radiating, and I'm sorry to say it, but just evil presence, like not good at all. It wasn't like the classic thing where they looked a certain way or they were talking to themselves and, you know, muttering and going nuts. They were silent as far as I know. It was just a presence, and I could not get off of that car fast enough. It was just
and
like,
I was
oh,
with you, and you
my
made
God.
Us get off at the station,
yes,
run to the next train, and
I did.
Get back on the next
That's
train.
Right. Yeah, couldn't handle it
and
at all.
Just running like, and
that
eating all your junk.
All wrong.
And,
yeah.
This is it. Because if we talk about with Neptune ghosts,
right,
or whatever you want to call them, presences either with you or that were there previously and this kind of thing.
If anyone remembers, it was a spinoff from The X-Files called Millennium, and it had Lance Henriksen, and he's the guy that played Bishop in Aliens. And anyways, it was one of the very first shows that was about like FBI profiler kind of
yes.
guy. And he had an almost sort of magical seeming sort of ability to see into the mind of the killer kind of thing. And now it's like a trope and it's everywhere and they all have that now. But in that show, it was kind of like the first time that we had really sort of seen that
yes.
in real life. And then they had all these actual FBI profilers, you know, interviewed and talking about how they actually do that. And it can seem to other people like they're doing something psychic. Mm-hmm. But what they're doing is they're just putting together like this massive database of things that they've seen and read about. And they can just spot from looking at a crime scene, like they can just go, oh, okay, definitely this guy is like Rain Man thing, where they're going, okay, yeah, he's this age, he's, you know, whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's kind of something
that
Neptune
that.
Does is like it,
yes.
you don't know why you know something, but you know it. And it doesn't have to be something psychic or magical or like, you know, you're hearing things from the great beyond, but you are tapping into an ability to cohese things together that
yes.
That you can't quite explain.
Put your finger on, yes,
yeah.
yes. There's just something happening or...
Yeah.
It doesn't happen often, but now and again.
Right. Yeah. And I think probably it could if you, you know, if that were something that you wanted to train yourself in, whatever.
Crystal ball readers.
Yeah.
Cross my palm with silver.
I haven't seen very many ads for FBI profiler, but
no,
I think that would be a
no.
cool thing.
Mm.
They always end up in a basement, though, with the, you know, with the night vision goggles and like having to fight someone off by hand, which isn't that fun. I imagine, I don't know.
Ghostbusters, right?
Don't cross the streams.
Yes. So, yeah. So, I don't know. It's kind of... I think it's one of those things that if you tap into it or you're very aware of your Neptune, you can certainly be in touch with other realms. But really, the reality of the life we live, it does get pushed to the back,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't. my case.
For most people, yeah. Depending on your Neptune placement, might be more on the surface. Or you might be like a man with 1,000 faces and literally it's on the surface.
Yes.
You know, everyone uses their Neptune differently. Or doesn't.
Maybe we can use it more between now and next time. And pay a bit more attention to what's happening with Neptune, right?
Yeah. I think Neptune's actually doing a few things this spring.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We'll get into that next time.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, that was our Neptune episode. You can find us at accessastrology.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can find us on iTunes if you go to...
And you can like us on iTunes or thumbs up.
Or you can rate the podcast and you can leave us comments on the website. Email us at accessastrology@gmail.com. And you can
follow us on Twitter.
All that. All of that stuff.
That's great. And I think next time we're doing a reader chart, so that's going to be very exciting.
Exactly. A listener has written to us with his chart details, and we're going to be doing a sample consultation.
Fabulous.
Exactly. Well, Axis Astrology is produced and recorded by Roger Aaron Toews. I'm Armin O'Neill.
And I'm Alison Price.
Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time.
Yeah.